单子比如说你速度你速度 forget them, they are very important, they give you the support. Without them, we would not be able to do our work. I will skip the apologies and go straight to item number 3, because Honorable Kruger has indicated to me that he has another appointment at 10, and he would like to make an input. We will go back to the apologies after he has made his input. On item 3, we are considering the program of the Portfolio Committee and his request that relates to that. Over to you, Honorable Kruger.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and compliments to everybody. We hope 2018 will be an enormous year for small businesses, and may small businesses make a lot of money from now on. Madam Chair, yes, there's 2 points. One is next Wednesday's meeting. Our party, and I was wondering if we can postpone next weekend's meeting, because our party will have a very important caucus meeting. It's difficult. Remember, caucus meetings is normally on a Thursday, and it's difficult, especially with sonar and security and all those things, people running around and dogs and what have you, to arrange a caucus meeting like this. So we ask that we postpone next Wednesday's meeting, if it's possible. The second point is the issue about Vodacom, what's the other company's name? Ericsson, and that small businesses. I was wondering if we can ask Vodacom to send us a report on, what was the end result of our discussions in our meeting. Because I received a phone call this morning from one of the small businesses, or the small business, and the woman was in tears. She haven't received 1 cent from Vodacom, although they promise us, or Ericsson, although they promise us they will resolve the problem that very day. And she's busy selling off personal assets just to pay their workers and to keep them, to give them work or what have you. So it's a very desperate situation for them. And it seems like Vodacom and Ericsson is just bullying small businesses. So I was wondering if either bring small Vodacom and Ericsson back to the committee, or just ask them for a report.
Can we get the views of other members on the two issues? Can you start with the first issue of the postponing the meeting on the 7th on the basis that there is sonar on the 8th, and then the DA is having a big caucus. I don't know what that means. Honourable Mother.
Committee Chair, I would ask for a comment from the Secretariat whether, if the meeting is postponed, what the implications are. If the implications are what will not have serious consequences, I would agree to the plea from DA, but if by postponing the meeting, the consequences are going, because sometimes these meetings are set in such a manner that they fit and feed into a schedule. So let's ask for a comment.
You know, I would want to comment because it's not just an issue of technicality. It's also an issue of, Comrade Mabasa is saying, the sequence of events. What I would ask us to compromise on in accommodating this would be that maybe we consider one of the Fridays to catch up with the program. Agree that we will not have a meeting on the 7th, we will postpone it, and then consider one of the Fridays, meaning that in terms of approving our program today, we will take that amendment into consideration, that we will go back as the management committee and then look at an appropriate Friday on which we can then readjust this program. Honorable Chair?
Yeah, I think that's a good idea, Chair. I think we support that proposal.
I don't think that we make a quorum for us to adopt the program, do we? Do we? Yeah, we do. Yeah. Can we then move for a mover for the adoption of the first quota program, Honorable Kruger? Okay. Second, Honorable Mabasa?
I second, Comrade Chairperson.
Okay, the committee has adopted its first quota program. Can we then respond to the second question, the second issue raised by Honorable Kruger? I didn't receive a call from mobile diesel bank. I saw a missed call, and then when I picked up my phone, I saw a message from Heidi, the owner of the business, and what she was saying was that they haven't received the payment, and both Ericsson and Vodacom have not honored what they committed to here in Parliament. I also received information from Nila that although Ericsson had committed together with Vodacom that they would not compensate them for the income that was lost when their contract was unfairly terminated, but instead they committed that they would increase their scope of work. What Nila said was that no, they have not increased their scope of work. Instead, they are slowly reducing. So I just wanted to add to that and agree with Honorable Kruger that we needed to follow this up. But my view is that I no longer see it as elbowing and marginalization of small businesses by big business. I now see it as arrogance and disrespect for Parliament. I no longer see it as, because Ericsson and Vodacom have been coming to this committee for more than, we started engaging them in 2016. 2017, we made follow-ups. They would give us contradictory explanations of their actions. What I see is that they have no respect for Parliament. They don't know what Parliament is. They don't care what the laws of this country mean. And in my view, I would not only want us to invite, to write them a letter. I would propose that we do write them a letter, but also we call them back, because they are actually disregarding Parliament and violating all the laws, the laws of this country, and also compromising the agenda of transforming the economy in this country and creating jobs. Jobs are going to be created by small businesses in this country, and big businesses in South Africa are actually playing a different role. I don't want to say all big businesses, but I'm referring to these two that we have engaged with here. Honorable Mabaso.
No, I agree with your observation, both the observation of Honorable Kruger and the chairperson's observations. And we must note that both these businesses make their income out of ordinary South Africans, so that they owe their growth by the support of ordinary South Africans as we utilize their equipment. So they should be the last ones to show arrogance to the portfolio committee, because by showing arrogance to the portfolio committee, it is also tantamount to showing arrogance to South Africans. So I agree with your observation. Thank you, Comrade Chairperson.
Honorable Tim.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning and compliments to everyone for the new year 2018. I think I concur with your sentiments, Chair, and also of Honorable Kruger. And even last time, as we were saying, they are arrogant. And we as the Portfolio Committee, we are about the interests of the people, our constituencies. And as they were here in Parliament, Parliament is law-driven more than anything. So they are to really show that, you know, they understand that Parliament, it's not like something that can be undermined, you know. So we are to do and teach them on behalf of other those that are still doing this thing. We are to set a tone, actually, as this portfolio committee, that we can no longer continue, you know, being lenient and as if we don't know what is it that we are doing. You know, as I've said, our interest is about our constituencies, the poor people that are to be assisted. So really, we are to show the public, you know, entirely that we mean business, you know, with our work, you know. So we are to teach them a lesson. Thank you.
Thanks. I also think that when we started with this process, we were not on the same wavelength in terms of understanding how deep the problem is. I just want to reflect on the case of Boniswa, Brawlers, Huawei, and Cell C. Cell C comes here and says, we have paid Brawlers, we are not going to pay Boniswa. And we insisted that you were supplied by Boniswa. They come back, Boniswa writes a letter. I am I out of the country. I can't attend the meeting, but I want to confirm that Cell C has paid me. Cell C comes here. They confirm that they have paid. But what we overlooked as a portfolio committee was whether Cell C paid twice. And if Cell C paid twice, they have to explain to us why they paid Boniswa and Brawler. Because it was still a question mark when they were forcing Boniswa to invoice through Brawler. And I remember the numbers that were quoted. Boniswa said, I supplied them and my invoice was 800,000. And Cell C was saying, we paid Brawler 1,200. That 400 markup must be explained as to what services was Brawler's paid for over and above the 800,000 that was charged by Boniswa for the services that were provided. Is Cell C happy to pay 400,000 just for Brawler to be a conduit for an invoice? I'm saying this because we said we are going to deal ruthlessly with corruption. And corruption cannot only be in the Guptas. Corruption is in businesses and everybody. It's a societal problem. And mean what I suspect in that arrangement of saying don't invoice us directly, invoice us through Brawler. I smell a rat. And if we cannot follow up why Brawler was paid, we will have failed in doing our job and also focusing on corruption where we suspect corruption is taking place. So, Mina, I still need an explanation with you. Firstly, why Brawler was paid and why there was a difference from what was charged by Boniswa and what was paid by Cell C paying Brawler. And what was the role of Huawei? Because Cell C said it's Huawei who said that we must pay through Brawler. The third party, what was the role of the third party thing? And I mean, that's what I would want also us to focus on. So I agree, let us bring them back, all of them, including Cell C, Boniswa, and Huawei, and Brawler, so that they can tell us what was the difference. First, Cell C has to explain to us whether they paid twice. And if they paid twice, it's not them who paid, it's the consumers of the Ethernet and the data.
Yeah, Chair, I think you have identified a serious potential problem, not only with potentially that relationship between suppliers to Cell C, but it could well be that it's replicated across the South African economy. But I would suggest that through you and the Secretary, make it quite clear in your communications with them that what is the purpose of the meeting. Come with documentation relevant to those invoices and payments. There's no point in asking them at the meeting. They'll say, well, we haven't got them. They need to know beforehand that that is what we want to see.
Thank you. Can we conclude on this matter in the same way that we will look for an appropriate age to call them? Thank you. You may go. Can you then go back to the apology? I received a formal apology from the minister, the deputy minister, and the DG. And the reason for them not to be here is that there is a cabinet lehudla. The minister phones me, and the DG also speaks to me. I don't know whether they did send the written apologies, but that is what I received. And then the parliamentary liaison officer this morning came also to inform us that is the situation.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, honorable members. Good morning, colleagues. Same goes with me, Chairperson. I received a phone call from Mr. Bachi and also from the parliamentary liaison officer that the three leadership is in the cabinet. Furthermore, I received the apology of the Honorable Trapper to his office, indicating that he is bereaved. And then I also received the apology of Honorable Mlaudze, Honorable Dex, and Honorable Osasana Shamiso. So those are the apologies that I received. However, I also received an apology from Honorable Beba, who has indicated that he was going to be a bit late, but fortunately he made it. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. We accept those apologies. Can we move then to the next item? The next item is a briefing by Treasury on the capacity of the Cooperative Bank Development Agency. And we would want to get the background of the Cooperative Bank Development Agency. The progress made and the impact made in terms of helping in terms of executing its mandate, and then the impact that was expected out of the establishment of the agency.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, and honorable members of the committee and the colleagues that are here with me. My name is Desmond Golding. I'm the chairperson of the Cooperatives Bank Development Agency, and I'm joined by the managing director for the agency, as well as the executive that deals with capacity building. They are seated here next to me. Madam Chair, we preface our presentation under...
Sorry. Could you please move and sit here? Can we also switch off that mic?
Thank you, Madam Chair. We would like to extend our warm appreciation and the respect for being invited to this important committee. My name is Desmond Golding. I'm the chairperson of the Cooperatives Bank Development Agency. I'm joined by the managing director with me, who's seated on the extreme left, as well as the executive that deals with capacity building. Madam Chair, indeed, we will take you through those particular areas that have been highlighted by the committee. But we thought that we need to be able to preface our brief presentation to the committee that ours is nothing else but to ensure that there is sustainability in the cooperatives industry, particularly those that are dealing with banking and finance, because we believe quite strongly that they epitomize real and fundamental economic integration. The architecture that we will be able to deal with, we move from the context that cooperatives are very important. As you would know, Madam Chair, that cooperative movement in this country started around the 19th century. And in 1912, when the land bank was established, you also see that in the main, it heavily assisted cooperatives, which were in the agricultural sector, by giving them concessional financing. And it expanded, the cooperatives movement expanded in the other erstwhile provinces at that particular time, the four of them. And cooperatives bank is also an incredible phenomenon that we'd like to talk about and show how cooperatives banks can fundamentally change the economic outlook in the financial sector. When we use the word cooperatives and cooperative financial institutions, we will use them interchangeably because the cooperative financial institution is more of an inclusive term, which also includes the banks or anyone who is a cooperative in the financial sector. We also look briefly or articulate our premise within the fact that we've got the international financial construct, which is currently in a rebound, and also that particular international financial construct has also seen a situation where in 2009 there was an economic meltdown globally, and cooperatives were able, in fact, to withhold the financial crisis, and many of them, in fact, escaped the financial crisis unscathed, given their nature and form, because the risk is shared. We also premised our presentation, Chair, around looking at the structure of the South African economy. We'll talk briefly about it because we think that the nature, the form, and the construct of the South African economy is highly concentrated, and it becomes a huge disenabler to small businesses and cooperatives in particular. We'll also look at what the contribution of cooperatives and small businesses do to the economy. We do believe that they play a critical role in the stimulation of the gross domestic product. Because if you want to analyze the gross domestic product, you look at consumer savings, you look at consumer spending, government spending, your net import and export, as well as your investment. And we do believe that cooperatives play a very critical role, stimulating the GDP in this country. We look at government debt, that's why we make a strong case that cooperatives play a critical role and they must be self-sustainable and be less dependent to government. Radicalized economic transformation is very important. You will see through in our theme why we speak about it, particularly in this particular point in time. We look at binding constraints as well as the strategic cooperative corrective interventions that we think are important to make sure that the economy of this country is transformed and democratized. If we look at the role that we play as the cooperatives bank and the vision that we have for cooperatives, ours is a very simple one that says that cooperatives must play a role where they facilitate financial inclusion and also ensure that there is sector competition. Because if you look at the current reality in South Africa, the financial sector is highly concentrated, it's abusive, it's monopolistic, it perpetuates inefficiencies in a sense that costs are high because there is no competition, and it also results in economic sluggishness in a sense that where there's concentration, there is no stimulation of the economy because there is no broadening of the cake. And if we look at the socio-economic realism, we did make a point that the financial sector is a microcosm of the bigger economy, which is highly concentrated, monopolized. Banks, the banking sector is dominated by the four big banks, which accounts for 90% of the banking sector. We talk about Absa, Standard Bank, First Rand, as well as the Nedbank. And also, you do have the financial sector, which is non-banking in nature. That is the insurance sector, and it controls assets which are over 9.4 trillion rands, which half of which are in fact found in the retirement savings subsector. And we should be able to say, Chair, that this market concentration also in the insurance sector is also dominated by All Mutual, Sanlam, MMI Group, as well as Liberty, which account for the bulk of that. So we're demonstrating the point, Chair, here that even the sector itself remains untransformed, the sector remains highly dominated by the few, and any actor or new actor that tries to come in the financial sector will always find it very difficult. Chair, we also then look at the fact that many of our people remain outside the banking sector or they remain unbanked, because any competition in the sector, you'd find that it becomes unsustainable because of the cost structure that is there as well. We also look at the financial cooperatives economy. We are making a point, Chair, here that cooperatives have become a global phenomenon. They are drivers of a big saving industry. They are drivers of big financial industries throughout the whole world. We're juxtaposing that against the approach in South Africa, where cooperatives are seen that they must play a role only in your small, micro, and medium enterprises. We are making a strong point, Chair, that globally, cooperatives are not only in the SMME, but they are big multinational institutions. Whether you look at them in Germany, in Kenya, in the Philippines, in Ireland, they are big multinational institutions. And we should be able also to deconstruct the fact that in South Africa we see them as survivalists, which are actually based in the rural areas or in economically depressed areas. We are saying that they need to be supported as SMMEs. We'll make a point, Chair, that there is a strong relationship between cooperative and SMMEs, because you do have, in fact, in this country, about 169 cooperatives, 291 SMMEs that are funded, in fact, by cooperatives in this country. So we think that they play a critical role in the sense that they must not only be confined into the space of small businesses or your survivalist businesses. I move, Chair, with speed. I look also at the binding constraints in South Africa. We make a point, Chair, here that the sector manages about 280 million, as opposed to the over trillions that we demonstrated earlier on in the financial sector. So what it means, therefore, Chair, is that the view, as we articulated, which is a binding constraint, is that cooperatives are seen to be inferior, and also their growth is stunted because the environment under which they operate, in fact, is difficult. We'll be able to articulate what is it that, in fact, we are proposing or that we are doing to make sure that we deconstruct this particular unfavorable space for cooperatives. We do also make a point, Chair, that that FISA represents 28 CFIs and two cooperatives banks with a membership of about over 50 million rands. The financial cooperatives regulatory architecture is actually highly costly, and also it becomes a disenabler to the cooperatives industry. We also say that there's a lack of skills in the area, given the fact that the regulatory environment within which cooperatives operate, it discourages, you know, any skilled or people with skills to actually to be integrated. There's also an issue which we will admit, Chair, that there is in fact poor government in some of those particular cooperatives, and their operating costs are too high, and some of them, of course, you know, lack access to technology. The other aspect as well that is a binding constraint is that cooperatives do not participate in the national payment system. As you would know, Chair, that the national payment system is a settlement system which is still dominated by big banks. So any cooperative which is in the financial sector, when they want to settle, they must settle on the back of the big, of the four big banks. And they will never, at any given cost, be able to be competitive in terms of interest rates, because they have to pay a premium to the four big banks, which will actually be able to assist them in the national payment system. We also make a point, Chair, that there is a low adoption of the technological banking system in the sector. We do make a point that it is also one area that we are focusing on to make sure that the cooperatives industry, particularly in the financial sector, are able to thrive and grow. There is tight cash flow position, because whatever access, there is also a limit within which cooperatives must reach a particular ceiling. Further than that, if they reach that particular threshold, then they are not regarded as cooperatives. And also there is this particular view, Chair, that from the central bank as well, the South African Reserve Bank, that cooperatives must remain as SMMEs and do not play in the bigger space. And we do believe that we need to be able to change that particular mindset. And this particular respected committee, since it deals with small businesses, must actually be able to make a point that the laws and regulations are changed in that particular regard. We did make a point, Chair, that the operating costs, in fact, are too high for the cooperatives. We proceed, Chair, that there is a need for a new thinking around cooperatives, and as CBDA, we are gradually infusing this particular new thinking, implementing this particular new thinking, which is actually first and foremost a change of perception that cooperatives are not survivalist business. They are not rural businesses. They are businesses in their own right. They may be in the SMME sector. They may also be actually big organizations as well. And in that particular kind of a cognitive engagement or paradigm shift that in fact we are infusing. We also should be able to say, Chair, that we do in fact see the upswing of big cooperatives, particularly in Orania, the SKA, which is actually formed by the members of the community, and actually it is in fact growing and it's becoming actually big business. And we think that such particular kind of examples must be able to be emulated elsewhere, but also say to respected members of parliament, respected members of committees, that even the rules must be able to change to make sure that cooperatives are able to grow and become big businesses. We make a point, Chair, that also cooperatives which are big are, for an example, your credit union at Harvard University, you know, which is big and it's all professionals at the university, it's a big organization. Qantas Credit Union, by the staff members at Qantas, it's also big, you know, which is the airline industry. So what we are saying, Chair, is that we are making a point that that particular paradigm shift is important. We do need also, Chair, for a separate regulatory regime, for cooperatives, which will actually be enabling to actually do away with the threshold that is actually currently there, but also cooperatives to ensure that they are, in fact, properly regulated under the new regulatory regime. The new model that, in fact, as CBDA, you know, are perpetuating and implementing, it's a new model that says, where do we see cooperatives in the next 40 years? What kind of transformation do we want to see? And we should be able to say that, Chair, that our thinking is actually premised on five vectors of this particular model. I'm not going to go into detail on it, safe to say that the new construct makes a point that cooperatives have to be able to ensure that they don't only serve the poor areas, but it is actually cutting across the other industries. The other point of the vector is that we need to make sure that cooperatives are put at the center of re-engineering the economy, but also making sure that we promote growth. We did make a point about their participation in the national payment system. We did also make, other various points that cooperatives must actually be able to have easy access, in fact, to capital. We do make a point, Chair, also that cooperatives must actually be financially sustainable. The first point of doing that is to make sure that the organization that drives and coordinates cooperatives, like the CBDA, is well-resourced. Currently, CBDA Chair's budget is about 20 million rand, and really, it is a drop in the ocean, given the big demand of what CBDA is doing, and we'll indicate quite briefly what we're doing. That's why we're making a strong point that what CBDA is receiving, because if we want to sustain the cooperatives, even the organization that coordinates that must actually be financially sustainable. We are saying that, Chair, if there's one thing also that we would want to see in the, as part of the new model that we're implementing, it's also making sure that the cooperative industry is the strong leadership, there's management, it's properly skilled in transactional banking, and also there's mitigation of risk. But the most important aspect is that we need to make sure that there is actually trust even in the market, that cooperatives can actually be able to drive, the financial sector. And lastly, under this particular presentation, is that as an organization, we are driving this particular new thinking, and what we are saying is that our sustainability means also sustainability of the industry. What exactly do we do? The agency is actually born out of the Cooperatives Act of 2007. We did supervision and regulation, we build capacity, we provide liquidity where it is necessary under the stabilization fund, but we also do provide, support all around. So what we have done, Chair, is that we have created that particular macro strategic picture around the cooperatives movement, throughout the whole world, that they are operating in the space, in the financial space, where they are big businesses in their own right. We look at also what is happening in South Africa, where the mindset, the regulations are geared towards relegating cooperatives into your SMME or survivalist business. And we are making a point that we need to be able to change that, both in regulations and mindset. So CBDA comes in to ensure that cooperatives industry is actually properly coordinated, by doing what we've actually been able to highlight. So ours, is to make sure that cooperatives are properly regulated, they're registered. We also regulate regulatory bodies. We ensure that there is capacity building that we facilitate, liquidity as we indicated as well, but also broadly speaking, to ensure that there is coordination in the industry as well, under cooperatives. What we've been able to accomplish, Chair, is that we've been able to accomplish in a sense that we've been able to deepen the stakeholder engagement, because there's been a lot of fragmentation by stakeholders. We're talking about your CFIs, government, your banks, or anybody who's involved, as well as organizations which are involved in the cooperative sector. In the past, there was too much fragmentation. As an organization, we've been able to pull that together to ensure that at least there is one common voice around the view of cooperatives. The other aspect, of course, Chair, is that we support cooperatives in building capacity, making sure that they are properly skilled, because the biggest problem, as we indicated, is leadership. Sometimes it's your risk management as well as basically your management. So we build capacity to ensure that they are able to manage their funds, and also they're able to deal with the dispute resolution. The other aspect, Chair, that we've initiated is a banking platform project. We hope that with this particular platform, we will actually make an indelible mark in the cooperative sector, because the platform will assist cooperatives in a way that they are able actually to transact among themselves. We do believe that this particular banking platform, which as CBDA we are currently rolling out, it will make a huge impact, in fact, in how cooperatives manage how they transact, because currently the banking sector is actually very unfavorable to them. The other aspect, of course, Chair, is that we have developed a sector performance standard and rules, that is, what kind of a rule-based environment and standards we would want to see cooperatives, because at the end of the day, the CFIs are holding members' monies, and we do want to ensure that there is particular standards and performance rules which, in fact, go with that. The other accomplishment that we've been able to do is to ensure that there is a myriad of publications where cooperatives in the financial sector are able to have information, you know, to be able to assist them. A lot of research, work with different universities and research institutions, just to make sure that there is critical information that is available for them. Then the next point, Chair, that we would like to present is the point that deals with the sector challenges. We did indicate earlier on that CFIs and cooperative banks are seen as inferior, and then the attitude then follows a particular kind of a mindset. Many of them, they do not actually enjoy the payroll deductions, which we think that it becomes important, because members, for them to be sustainable, they need to ensure that there are these particular deductions in an event they are actually engaging in transacting. There is regulatory burden that is making compliance very costly, and we do believe that cooperatives like SMMEs, we need to be able to reduce compliance costs. And I think that is also one big challenge that is there. The lack of capacity, Chair and respected members of the committee, we spoke about it, the skills, but also the other thing as well that is a big challenge is just the futuristic vision, you know, by all and sundry, government and the private sector, and the preparedness just to change on how we see cooperatives and their sustainability. The other big challenge that we are facing is a poor outreach, poor governance, as well as also the inability for them to attract highly skilled people, and because they are in a survivalist industry. And unless we are able to break the mold, the regulation that allow cooperatives to be big, then we'll actually be able to attract talented people. The other aspect as well is that there is lack of diversification in the industry, and one of the things that we're dealing with is to ensure that we deepen that particular diversification. The one other point, Chair, that in fact we would like to make is the fragmentation of government support, you know, to cooperatives, which we think that if there is a coordinated support of government, the Department of Small Businesses, your Department of Trade and Industry, the Department of Economic Development, the Department of Finance, that particular coordination would actually ensure that there is a unison view on cooperatives. The other aspect of that section also is a big challenge is the one on the regulations that in fact we have actually been able to highlight. The national payment system, Honorable Chair, we have actually expanded on it and how it will actually be able to assist cooperatives, because it will mean settlement is easier, it's quick, and it's cheaper, and currently it's not happening, therefore it's a big challenge. Technology is expensive, and it's also continues to be a big challenge. Also, the tight cash flow, which results in a weak capital base of the cooperatives, is also a big challenge. The lack of innovation and the ability of them to attract financial resources, which will enable them to be able to acquire technology, is also one aspect. The limited revenue generation, because of the nature of the industry, is also one big challenge. How do we, in fact, propose to overcome these challenges? We say, Chair, the fast tracking of use of technology will actually be one important aspect. And as we did indicate, that the banking platform project must be fully funded, because at this particular stage, it is not fully funded, and we do believe that it will radically change the face of cooperatives, because any transactional banking, because cooperatives are involved in transactional banking, you need a banking platform, like in any financial environment. We have received funding, but it's not enough. You know, the challenge is quite big. That's why our point and what would also put before this respected committee is also the fact that a resolution around, you know, sufficient funding around the technology platform that becomes important. Also, the establishment of the cooperative bank, you know, it's also very important because we do not have a national cooperative bank. A national cooperative bank is very important because it will dilute the concentration of the banking sector. And we are saying that government must actually be able, you know, to have you know, a stake. Government banks a lot of money with the four commercial banks. It could actually also ensure that part of the money, we are saying even if it's 10% of the national fiscal, that would actually change the balance sheet of this national cooperative bank. You know, I know there's a view around the state bank and all others. We are saying it must not be either or. In many countries which are highly capitalistic, you do have national cooperative bank, you do have state banks. So it's not a socialist thinking, you know, around a national cooperative bank that the government is going to stay. It is a very progressive economic inclusion, economic integration ethos, which is actually practiced in many countries. We are also saying, Chair, overcoming this particular challenge as well is how do we ensure that we channel government funding of SMMEs and cooperatives via the CFI. So we are saying that the CFI can play a critical role where government is supporting the SMMEs, then use the CFIs as a channel towards actually funding the CFIs. We think by so doing, it will actually be able to allow a financial muscle to CFIs. We did indicate, Chair, that to date, we've got 291 SMMEs that are funded by CFIs. So we think that that will actually augment and assist in deepening this particular area. The other aspect, Chair, that we would like to talk about is an area where we allow payroll deductions for savings and loans. We think that will actually also overcome the challenge of a payroll deduction. We also believe that also, Chair, we need to establish a deposit insurance fund for CFIs to be incorporated with one of, you know, your large banks or even, the central bank. Why the deposit insurance fund is important is because sometimes cooperatives, the way they function, like in any other institution in the financial sector, you need to be able to make sure that you always protect the deposits. The other aspect here to overcome challenges is a strong political will. We would like to respectfully submit that we do not think there is a strong political will to support cooperatives. The resources that are put by the state in managing all the cooperatives, the regulatory framework that is there, you know, in fact, is an albatross around the necks of the cooperatives. We believe that the political will translate in a sense that there is sufficient resources, then there's also a proper enabling environment for cooperatives, you know, to be able to operate. And also we say that it's not only government that must actually be able to do that, it's also the private sector as well that must actually be able to demonstrate that. And we're also saying that government must actually be able to support the establishment of the cooperative banks for the public servants, which also your large SOPs as well as MPs as well. We think that because cooperative is member-based, you can actually be able to transform this particular economy. As we move towards the concluding, Chair, we are saying that also the collaboration between CBDA with other stakeholders, particularly in the private sector, becomes very important. We think that the financial services charter hasn't been able to be fully implemented. We do believe that the banks, the non-financial institutions like insurance companies, are actually window dressing when it comes to you know, transforming the financial sector. We did actually make a point, Chair, around the increase of the budget. We also made a point in one of the committees last year that we do believe that there is, in fact, means and ways that the state can actually be able to fund cooperatives. One of them will actually be the increase of allocation from treasury, because a strong case has been made around cooperatives. The business model is there, and we are currently finalizing the broader strategy around that. We also said that given the fact that there is this particular investigation on the banking collusion, we think that some of the windfall out of the fines that will come out of that must be utilized to actually augment the budget of the CBDA and support the cooperatives. We did make a point in the finance as well as the trade and industry committee, you know, around this particular point on how we can actually practically fund the organization. But also we're saying the establishment of the provincial offices, you know, will also, of CBDA, will also assist in the massification of the support of cooperatives, because it's not only assisting them with mechanisms, you know, to be able to organize themselves and be able to utilize their funding. More importantly, is your business support. We move on, Chair. Saying that part of the latest development is the supervision unit that has moved to the Reserve Bank since last year, and it has moved to the South African Reserve Bank together with staff. So these are some of the latest developments that are there. The CFI rules are currently under revision, because we do believe that we need to be able to revise the rules that are currently governing the CFI, which may ultimately mean that also change within the Act. We have also commissions, which is part of the critical success factors, which are moving to the next slide, the finalization and adoption of the National Cooperatives Banking Strategy. Why we think that is important, and it's one area that as an organization would want, we want a unison view around the cooperatives banking, which is fully informed, fully bought into, which is linked to the National Development Plan, because we think that the fragmentation that is there does not help. The other one, of course, is actually the new value proposition in the financial sustainability model that as an organization we are actually currently looking at, which has got elements of what we've spoken about around sustainability of the industry as well as an organization. The location of the CBDA currently is the National Treasury. There's a view that it must go to the Department of Small Businesses or Market Conduct. You know, the location becomes very important as well in this particular regard. There's a particular discussion there, because we're thinking that, or our view, put differently, is that if we were to make an indelible mark in the sector, we do need a proper home department that can actually be able to make sure that our mandate is fully implemented and is fully funded. The productive support, government and the private sector for the cooperative industry, these are some of the critical success factors. And also, of course, lastly, Chair, is the issue around the CBDA budget that has been speaking about. 20 million rand is actually very minute, very meagre in a huge industry where there's huge challenges, because we do have outreach support in the your deepest rural areas where there are actually banking cooperatives, and we go there and we support them. And as we close, Chair, we'll be able to demonstrate that briefly. As I move towards closure, Chair, I thought that let me say that what we are saying, it's not because we are dreamers or we are irresponsible. It's because the industry is big out there, and if you look at how big is the industry, you know, throughout the whole world, these are the numbers, Chair, you know, and the penetration of cooperatives, you know, throughout the whole world. Because sometimes the view is that cooperatives sometimes are seen as survivalist, socialist movement. It's not. They are business imperatives, you know. If you look at countries, what is their capitalization? What is their market cap? What is their penetration in the financial sector? For an example, in the United States, 47%, and you all go down. So cooperatives are part and parcel of your economic imperatives or your economic mainstream, which in South Africa, we need to be able to move towards that. Even in the African continent, Chair, you will actually be able to see that in countries like Kenya, in Tanzania, in Swaziland, in Zambia, cooperatives are huge. They've got huge total, I mean, they've got huge assets, you know, and their penetration is also quite extensive. So we are saying, Chair, that that particular mindset and the support and how we deal with cooperatives, this empirical evidence globally in the African continent demonstrate that cooperatives, in fact, are very critical. With all, Chair, we'll close by this particular pictography where you see what cooperatives are doing at Harvard University. You can see that they are actually a huge organization. They've got ATMs. They operate like, you know, full business. You'll also see that if you're anywhere in the U.S., there's free ATM that is there because, you know, the support that they've actually been able to receive, and also the fact that they've been able to penetrate the market quite strongly. And the government of the United States assisted the cooperatives movement at their inception. Qantas as well, which is the, you know, the airline, staff members there, they've got cooperatives, they've got their credit union, and it's functioning like, in fact, big banks, and actually they are, in fact, ensured that that this particular sector is actually fully transformed. They've got huge offices. It's not like they are small survivalist businesses. They operate like big banks, and their point of departure was always that government has been able to support them, and then they operate as a mainstream business in their own right. I've got about a few pictures, Chair, that I want to show. Cooperatives in parts of the African continent, in Kenya and other parts of the African continent, they're big business, Chair. They play a dominant and a big role, in fact, in this particular sector. You know, and they've got very great facilities. You know, their recognition is actually well endowed, and we should be able to indicate, Chair, that the picture that, in fact, you are seeing globally around cooperatives, it's a picture that says cooperatives are part of the mainstream business, whereas when you see in South Africa, they are actually around the periphery. So what we are saying, Chair, in a nutshell, that our request is that the suspected committees are able to assist us with the relaxation of the regulatory framework around cooperatives, removal of the, you know, your threshold regulation, the other aspect, proper funding for support of cooperatives, and also, you know, the review of the whole cooperatives regime in South Africa to ensure that it becomes a proper enabler. Thank you very much, Chair. The other information, Chair, that in fact we provided was additional information that is in your packs, where we've included the budget of CBDA and also the cooperatives that are there that are registered and deregistered. I don't think that Honourable Chair must actually take much of your time. I think we could actually make reference to those cooperatives that in fact have been registered, those that are actually operating in the sector. On that, Chair, would like to thank you and the respected members of the committee. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I was laughing at you when you were presenting. I see myself in you. And I wonder, what is the level of your frustration? Because many people who are passionate about cooperatives are at the same time very frustrated because whatever they say falls in deaf ears. Also, it has a very, very important point.
the slide that has got political and what came to my mind was that maybe we are too harsh, those who understand cooperatives are too harsh when they use the word political within them. Maybe we should start at, do we share the same understanding? Do we have a common understanding of what cooperatives are and what is it that they are capable of doing? And do we have the right people in place? Because if we are unable to do that, we find a situation where those who are passionate will be frustrated and maybe give up or move out. Because one can't remain in one situation where you are banging your head against the wall and there's no one who's listening to you. I also appreciated that you have, in your presentation, you keep on referring to this committee that it's a committee that you think can help you. You were one of the agencies that I invited as soon as this committee was established. And because you are located under Treasurer, I have to write to the Minister of Finance, Minister Nen, who responded by saying that I have no right to invite you. You don't account to the Portfolio Committee on Small Business, you account to Treasury. And I closed the door after reading that letter and cried. Because I felt that there was no understanding of how cooperatives could actually help in resolving the problems that Treasury is faced with. Treasury is pumping a lot of money on welfare interventions in this country in terms of poverty, child support grant, RDP houses, scholar transport, food parcels, national school nutrition program. With cooperatives, there is no child that would require a school to provide food for a child because that child will eat 3 meals from home. That is what cooperatives are capable of doing, addressing social and economic issues. But the understanding, if you don't understand, you will not have any political will, because political will comes with understanding. And I really want to thank you for your presentation. And then give members, one day I will show you my own model that talks about cooperatives owned by public servants. And I even go to an extent of saying councillors, MPs, MPLs, the problem that we have today the highly contested local government elections are based on the lack of that. Because to be a councillor to some people is a form of employment. And if there is no alternative, then those who stand for those positions get killed. Whereas if we had organized them and forced them into cooperatives, they would not stand and look at being a councillor as a form of employment. They would stand as councillors because they have a contribution to make in the society. So the lack of understanding of what you can achieve in addressing socio-economic conditions doesn't exist in this country. That is why South Africa is number two from the bottom. And we keep on doing the very same thing that we have been doing for the past 25 years when we know that there is 88% failure rate. And we then increase funding on social grants. We even have a target of 175 billion by 2020. So I think that at this presentation is very, very important. And I would want members to treat this presentation as a very important presentation if we wanted to establish sustainable cooperatives. This agency needs to be given the respect that it deserves and to be resolved in the manner it's supposed to. And make everybody understand the mandate of an agency called Cooperative Bank Development Agency. I will, there is fresh tea outside. You can go out and have tea and then come back.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson. My first comment is just to express appreciation for the input that has been made. We really appreciate the quality and the substance of the input. And then my next question is to what degree has this been canvassed all over the country? I'm referring to the spheres as well as the municipalities, etc., not within government. But outside government, I would like to know if bodies like SANACO have been consulted, you know, if they have made input. And but thirdly, what role would you want this portfolio committee to play? You know, what are your expectations from the portfolio committee, you know, as you came to present? Thank you.
No, thank you, Chair. Let me again appreciate the presentation from the presenter. But first of all, before I say anything, can we go back to page 22 on your left and the bottom? The fundamental mindset, and then you correct that thing. The fundamental mindset. I'm not sure if it's a correct experiment. Mindset, yes. The fundamental mindset, and then the next word. Please, can you correct that one? Thank you. Thank you. But, Chairperson, I think the presentation to us as a committee was not an eye-opener. It's something that you've been saying all along since we started in 2014. I'm happy that the organization has come up with this research and is a true reflection of what is happening in the country when it comes to cooperatives. But the big question is, what is to be done? I think the answer is that we need a political will. I think that is what the committee should consider. Other than that, I'm happy with the presentation. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you, Chair. I'm also joining my fellow colleagues in appreciating the presentation. And as Honorable Belwa has said, that it's not a new thing. It's something that the committee has been concerned with, the issue of cooperatives. I remember one time the chair corrected me when I said cooperatives can grow to be small or medium enterprises. And then the chair said, no. What is it that you mean? Because cooperative bank, she made an example of the cooperative bank, that it can have a huge building as compared to your formal bank, and it can employ too many people. So as I was looking, and they cannot, they will remain being cooperative. The cooperative bank will remain being a cooperative bank. It will not grow to be something else, but it will grow as its nature and its character. So the presentation has assisted me a great deal. And the issue in terms of, Honorable Mabasa, what is it that you want the portfolio committee to assist with? But I think that we also have that obligation. Where you said there's no political will, in terms of the role that we assigned as the portfolio committee, we are to ensure that those that are to do that justice in ensuring that at the end of the day there is a political will, because it's not about us, it's about the future of South Africa, it's about us ensuring that indeed we do change the mindset. And as the chair will only say that the budget of South Africa is a consumption budget than to be a productive budget, and we are to scale down, you know, and lower the numbers in terms of the register, your indigenous register, your social grants register, and we are to really ensure that we are meeting you halfway as the portfolio committee in ensuring that those that are to make it possible, those that are to ensure that there is, at the end of the day, that political willingness. They are just to do that, because it's not about them, it's not about today, it's about the future, and it's about ensuring that the economy, indeed, of South Africa does change, I think.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Mr. Golding, for your presentation and to your executive members for attending. Just for the committee's information, Mr. Golding, are you the same Mr. Golding who is on the ANC's Transformation Committee and a member of the COSATU Progressive Economist? Could you confirm that or deny it first?
Well, I am Desmond Golding, who used to be in the economic transformation of the ANC, And who used to be in the time of progressive economies for COSATU about 7-8 years ago. So I am that old who used to be involved in those two organizations.
And if I may also just get some background, you were recently appointed to this position, I understand, and you have a background in credit finance and economic development department at KZN, is that correct?
Indeed, for the record, I'm an ex-investment banker, and I used to be the HOD for Economic Development in KwaZulu-Natal, and I was appointed to this position by the former minister. In fact, it was Minister Nene who appointed me to this position.
Okay, thank you. So. The reason I ask those questions is clearly the leadership of your organization has a responsibility to drive the agenda of the community, the cooperative bank development agency. And one of the main points that's been brought up this morning is the lack of political will to change the dynamics of the economy such that cooperatives play a bigger part in the economy. Would you agree with that?
There's no doubt.
So, just then, the question is, what is the underlying cause of the failure of cooperatives to spontaneously emerge and grow and become a major part of this economy? And I use the word spontaneously advisedly because one of the problems that we've seen in this country is that a lot of co-ops are formed because they're told to form. When I say told, the grant has been made available to them, and it seems like a good thing to do at the time. And invariably those co-ops fail, and when I say invariably, up to 90% of the co-ops that have been formed fail. And those that don't fail, in other words, those that hang around, generally speaking, don't grow. And I think that the perception that you communicated today, that cooperatives are seen as survivalist small businesses, is actually correct. The majority of small businesses, of cooperatives in this country, are barely surviving. They have the minimum number of members, which is 5, in many, many cases, and they simply haven't been able to gain economic traction to become important economic stakeholders in the communities in which they operate. Now this clearly contrasts, that you have, as your statistics indicate, with countries where cooperatives have grown. And my research indicates that in fact it's New Zealand that is the country that in which cooperatives contribute the greatest proportion of GDP to the economy. And many European countries significant component of cooperatives in their economic makeup, which disproves the point, as you yourself said, that cooperatives are necessarily a socialist entity, you know, or concept, construct. I mean, they are communal. That's the you know, they are cooperative, they're collaborative. That's all fine, but they can exist and do exist successfully within a capitalist society. And South Africa does have a capitalist society. So I think that the fundamental question that we need to ask here in the committee, and you've touched on it, is why are cooperatives not successful in this country? Why are they not being able to grow into the scale that then makes it necessary to have cooperative banks? Most of these co-ops, in fact, I'd like to get your answer. I think you mentioned something like 291. That was a figure you gave of the number of co-ops, the banks with cooperative financing institutions. That's a minuscule number. You know, so why is it that the co-ops that do exist, why do they go to the retail banks? Is it because the footprints of the cooperative banks are simply not big enough? You know, what is holding it back? It's the chicken and egg situation that I'm trying to get an understanding of. Is it, why are co-ops not growing? Is it because there's not enough banking finance, or is there not enough banking finance because there aren't enough co-ops to do banking with them? And it's a question that this committee has been pondering on for some time, and hopefully we will be going to visit Kenya shortly and possibly Spain to understand what are the success ingredients in an African country where co-ops play a very important part in the economy, and in a European country where one of the most well-known co-ops in the world, the Modrogon Co-op, is a $1 billion+ co-op, and it's huge, employs tens of thousands of people. So you're right again to say that co-ops should not be seen to be small. And in a way, the fact that they are under, sort of under the umbrella of the Department of Small Business Development reinforces that perception, which is a problem in some respects, but one of the things this committee has battled to do is to get its name changed from the Department of Small Business Development to the Department of Small Business and Cooperative Development. It still hasn't happened, nearly 4 years into our term. And co-ops are the, you know, the stepchild of many, many departments: Department of Social Development, Department of Small Business Development, Department of Trade and Industry, Department of Agriculture. You know, everybody in the job wants to support the co-ops, but the co-ops just are not getting moving. So your frustrations are understandable. And I think part of the thing that this committee has also identified is that the ecosystem that the Cooperative Development Act legislates to be created, it doesn't exist. The Cooperative Bank being, you know, Cooperative Development Agency being one of the elements that does exist. But the tribunal, the, you know, the development agency itself, they simply haven't been financed by the Treasury. It's like the taps have been not even turned off. They've never been turned off. The money hasn't been available. But again, it comes back to the chicken and egg problem of spontaneity. Co-ops, for them to be successful, have to be driven by visionary leaders in communities that have a plan to marshal the resources of their community, develop products that have a market in the community, and are able to sell them to that community. That's what's been missing. And I think part of the problem that we have, particularly in our rural areas, is the concept of ownership that still rests in the traditional tribalistic the notion of the chief being in charge of everything. And there's no title deed, there's no rights to land ownership, you know, there's no concept of agency, economic agency, on the part of the local people. You know, they don't have the mindset that says, I can go off and form a co-op and start a business and grow it into something, because the culture in which they're operating doesn't allow it. It's not conducive to that type of mindset. So I think that when you talk about this, you know, the systemic blockages, that's something which has to change. Now, you do get some progressive chiefs, and we've met them in KZN and elsewhere, who see that economic partnership with the people can lead to economic growth and reduce dependency on grants, but that's very, very rare. We haven't found it a lot. So I think part of what the Cooperative Bank Development Agency has to do is also engage with stakeholders on a broader level as to what economic transformation and socio-economic transformation has to happen in the rural areas to make people controllers of their own destiny. So that's just sort of overall view, overall comment, which, you know, I'd like to put on the table. I have a few specific questions. It's a problem that the regulator and the agency are not aligned. And you did allude to the possibility of your reporting being moved from Treasury into somewhere else, potentially Department of Small Business. I mean, I don't think that's going to work, quite honestly, because you are effectively a banking oversight agency, and you belong within the Treasury, in my opinion. But there needs to be a dotted line relationship with the Department of Small Business Development. And so we as the committee can certainly advocate change and advocate policy directions. But, you know, I'm of the view that you do need to stay within the Treasury's ambit. You refer to the National Cooperative Banking Strategy in one of your slides. You commissioned this study, I understand. I wasn't sure when you were expecting that study to be completed. Who is doing the study? And what are you hoping to get out of it? I'm quite intrigued by your statistics relating to the penetration rate on slide 25, I think it is. Penetration of what is my question. And I ask that question because if you look at the numbers, I'm just turning to that slide now. You say United States, $1 trillion. Okay, now what does that actually refer to? Are you referring to the assets of the cooperative banks? In which case, 47% penetration rate of what? Total banking assets? But that is absolutely not possible. But if the assets of the U.S. banking system becomes $2 trillion, which is what this would imply. So I would just like a bit of clarity on that, please. That's all for now, Chair. Thank you.
So what I would do is, through you, I would request the executive to pick up the questions, then I will then do an overall closure on answering. Thank you.
Okay, good morning, honorable members. My name is Olawope Matane. I'm the managing director of the CDBA. I will try to answer some of the questions. Let me actually start from the last one upwards. So with regards to the sector size internationally, so the trillion in assets, these are in credit unions. The penetration rate is the number of people who belong to cooperative banks or credit unions. So actually 2 years ago, the U.S., they reached the 100 million mark in terms of the number of people belonging to credit unions. So if there's 100 million people belonging to credit unions, the population of the U.S. is about 300 million, so you can do your calculation there. Okay, and then the commissioning of the study, we have GTEC within the Treasury, which is assisting us. It's called the Government Technical Advisory Center. They are assisting us with the National Cooperative Banking Strategy. We're hoping this will be done by July this year. What we're hoping that the strategy will help us is in terms of government-wide consolidation. So there's so much bits and pieces of things happening within government. And the strategy is to help us pull everything together to say, do we have one strategy as government? So you're looking at CEDA, SCFA, your provincial departments of economic development, your national department of economic development, all we've got rural development doing cooperatives. So we've got also social development. As I'm talking, I'm just remembering all the government departments that are doing something on cooperatives. So we want to pull all the government departments together in one strategy, who in one way or another are supporting cooperatives, to say this is one strategy that we will follow as a government. Firstly, national cooperatives, and then in there, how do we fit in the cooperative banks in that picture. And then with regards to the regulator and the development agency not aligned, so just to make an example, so as the development agency, we've got a lot of ideas in terms of the growth of the sector. So just to make an example, we are saying as cooperative banks, they should be able to invest in exchange-traded funds. That's what we are saying as the investment agency. The regulator is saying, no, 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 that is too risky. So that is just one example where we are not aligned. And the reason as the development agency we want this growth is that the groups of people who come to us as the agency to say they want to form these cooperative banks, one of the requests is, can we invest in exchange-traded funds? And if the answer is no, it's a deal breaker, they're saying. Then when, how do we grow our money? We say, no, 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 through loans. They say, but none of us need any loans. We are fine in terms of loans. So there is an issue in terms of the model between the development agency and the regulator. In terms of the agency staying with National Treasury, I will not touch on that now.
Thank you, MD, and good morning. So good morning, members, honourable members. I will take the role of the portfolio committee, some of the recommendations that we would like to table to the committee. For starters, if they can facilitate an interministerial cooperative banking committee so that this strategy can then talk to the national cooperative banking strategy, could talk to the role of each ministry in terms of their role of developing this sector, because research has shown that cooperative banking has got a critical role to play in inclusive growth. So that interministerial cooperative banking committee is critical so that we all talk and sing from one hymn book. And then the other one is to amend, the proposal is for the Department of Small Business to amend the Cooperative Act. If you were to look at the Cooperative Act, I don't have the section right now, it excludes cooperative financial institutions or cooperative banks, as it were, from accessing the startup capital that is offered to other cooperatives, and we don't understand why that is, because these in essence are SMMEs and they are cooperatives. So why, if you are granting startup capital to other cooperatives, you are denying that to these types of institutions? And the other one is, so as you're working with CIFA, some of our CFIs have complained to actually say the interest rates from CIFA, they are too high. So instead of helping them, they are actually killing their institution. And in fact, they have taken, the board of directors of these institutions have taken a decision to say, we are, after we've paid up the loan from CIFA, we don't want any more of CIFA money. So for us, that is very critical, because that is the only capitalization point for CFIs, because their reliance on member deposits only stagnates their growth. Imagine an institution in rural Bufanganyana in Limpopo that when they started their organization, because our minimum requirements say 200 members and 100,000 in share capital, these rural communities have taken them 2 years to 3 years to raise the 100,000 share capital. Once they reach that 100,000 share capital in 3 years, they go to CBDA to be registered as a deposit taking license. CBDA issues them the deposit taking license, right? So how do they operate? How do they issue out loans? Where does the money come from? Because these, most of them are reliant on social grants for income and other things. So where we see traction in terms of the growth of the sector is in communities like Orania, where there's a strong economic base. You know, because these are farmers that are well-to-do. So we are saying this CIFA is a channel to grow the sector in terms of capitalization, but we are not managing it properly because we are not well-coordinated in our efforts. So if the rate could be reduced. And the other practical example for coordinated approach in terms of support, CBDA mandate is to develop and support cooperative banking in the country. And we are saying going forward, we want to have business development officer in the provinces that will support our CFI so that they are run efficiently. Support CFI. Then CFI channel SMME funds to small businesses that want to start up their businesses or grow their businesses. But now we're saying the Department of Small Businesses should come in at that juncture so that we don't throw money into these small businesses. Because that's the problem with CIFA right now, because they are not getting their money still from CFI. So we're saying the department should actually extend support to those small businesses by having what was called in the agricultural space extension officers. So now we throw small business development officers into the SMEs that are beneficiaries of the CFI loan, so that from the minute that the loan is granted to that SME, they are married to a small business development officer that is going to make sure that the loan is used for what it was requested for, number one. Number two, they work together with the small enterprise business owner to make sure that they've got a plan, they get cash flow, so that the loan is serviced. So those are some of the things that we're putting forward to the department to say, let's work together and make sure that this is a value chain of some sort between CBDA, the CFI, and the enterprises that are beneficiaries of those loans, so that we can see money coming back from those enterprises. And in that way, those new businesses will grow. I've already spoken about the capitalization of CFIs. Maybe CFA can also offer concessional loans to the CFIs for a period of time until the sector gets traction. So those are some of the things that we are going forward. Our minister, the current minister, actually is very listening to us when we go to him to say we need support for this sector. And we're saying if maybe the ministers can talk to each other and get our minister to put pressure on the South African Reserve Bank in terms of the regulatory framework, that would really, really help. Our minister, yes. So for us, for instance, some of the concessions, because his question has always been, what concessions do you want me to make or the government to make for this sector to grow and heighten the profile of cooperative banking in the country? And we're saying to him, in Kenya, when they started on this movement, some of the concessions that the Kenyan government made was, one, let's establish a national cooperative bank in the country. But then they got a stake in that business, 50% stake. And then over time, cooperatives bought them out. So that's one. Number two, they said, if you are a civil servant, you are a police, you're joining the service today, we are going to pay your salary through your SACO. Whatever you do after that, that's your business. So we could do the same. SME funds for development could be channeled through the cooperative bank. You know, housing loans and all those things. We've got civil servants that are highly indebted, that cannot buy homes for their children because they are highly indebted. And we're saying if those development funds for such could be channeled to this cooperative bank, the national cooperative bank, then we will be able to see traction. Because you've asked about the failure rate of this CFI, and we're talking about CFIs here for us, cooperative banking. And we're saying some of these CFIs, most of them are started organically at community level by my mother, Martha Nini, who knows nothing about banking, who has not been exposed in running a business, let alone banking as a business. So now you get them, you expect them to submit quarterly returns to the South African Reserve Bank regulators. How are they going to do that? And us, as the Cooperative Bank Development Agency, we try our utmost best to explain what do we mean by prudential regulation and so many other things. And it takes us, if it was going to take a high school graduate or a BCom graduate 2 weeks to understand those concepts, it takes the mama in the rural community maybe a year to understand that. So it means we have to go back and go back and go back with the 20 million budget that we have. So, but also to add on what you are saying, the manner in which CFAs are structured and their accreditation of the courses,
the training that is offered by training service providers is more about a person who is going to get paper credits to enter, to continue and go to university level. What is being offered by service providers, accredited by many sectors, are 5 days courses, 2 days courses, 4 days courses. I understood cooperatives because I was put in a long-term training program. Even today, I'm still learning. The institute that trained me, called the International Institute, is still training me today. The changes that are taking place in the space of cooperatives, but also the narrow approach that we have in this country to respond to Honorable Chancellor's question. I want to repeat what I said, that let us not be too harsh and say there is no political willingness. My view is that there is no understanding of what cooperatives are and how do they differ from SMMEs and other businesses. Also, the approach in South Africa is the development of cooperatives as the end product. Not cooperatives, not to use the concept of cooperatives to facilitate development of communities, which is what I also want to respond to the input made by Honorable Chan in relation to the communal land owned by the chief. In actual fact, that system fits very well in the concept of cooperatives. Because a person with a title deed can sell the piece of land. In a communal land set up where you are promoting establishment of community-owned enterprises, the custodian of that land is the chief, but communities are given permission to utilize the land for their own development. Now, so you need them to understand the tribal system and advantages of the tribal system in relation to the cooperative development system for community economic development and social development of communities. For you to then argue that giving people a title deed will make cooperatives prosper. Giving people a title deed relates to SMMEs who do not subscribe to the cooperative concept. The communal land arrangement relates to cooperatives because cooperatives are not promoting individual businesses. They are facilitating the establishment of community-owned businesses. And also the manner in which conflicts in a communal setup is that the conflict is resolved by the entire community. In that setup, there is no family that would go to bed hungry because there is no one working in that community. Members of the community would actually make a contribution and make sure that in that family there is, and even deciding that the first opportunity for a job will be given to that family. It then takes away dependency of communities on governments to resolve all the problems. The situation we are at right now is that in South Africa we are promoting two states. Welfare state for the poor because we are not applying the community development concept. We are applying a welfare
approach of giving people social grants and all other free things that are given, instead of facilitating and enabling them to do for themselves, which is the developmental approach. So the communal land facilitates a situation where not one person from a family would have a title deed and decide on to sell the land. But what has been given to the family remains. I want to make an example with myself. I'm the last one at home, got married, I divorced, my father died, I was caught by the chief man. Come back because this piece of land belongs to your family. And in your family, you are the most successful. Come and rebuild here. And this is what happened because it is known as a piece of land that was given to John Julana and his siblings and his grandchildren, greater grandchildren. So there is no title deed, but the whole community knew that this belongs to John Julana. And amongst the children, I got married, and then he said to me, with Isinduna, yes, you were married, you divorced. Where you are is the home for your children. It belongs to your husband. They can chase you, one thing. But here is where you were born. This piece of land belongs to your father and your siblings and other people that come from your family. So I am living in Peter Maritzburg, but I have what I call my home is in Harding, communal land, called back by the chief. So that is not a bad system for cooperative development concept and for community development. It relates to the African way of living.
Thanks, Chair, and thank you for the responses. I just want to pick up again on the GTEC report now, and also ask the department who is sitting behind you, the extent to which you as a department, in other words, small business, are involved in this commission, not the commission of the report, but the production of the report, because clearly, as you said, it's highly fragmented, the environment for CMA, for co-ops and the representatives. You know, for this department not to have a major input into that report obviously would be you know, disastrous. Just on the point that the chairperson raises, look, I think that this is a very complicated matter relating to land tenure. And I don't see that there is a contradiction between the call for a title deed and there being the opportunity for communal title deeds. You don't necessarily have to own it as an individual. You can own it as a community, but you still need to own it. And the problem is that the system we have at the moment in the rural areas in this country is basically a feudal system, where there is a chief who has title through the trust, and he essentially is the determinant of what economic activity goes on in that land. But Chair, you're shaking your head, but this is the way it works. And the phrase that I used earlier, which is extremely important here, is that of economic agency. In other words, individuals and communities and families need to be empowered. They need to believe that they can be the owners of their own destiny. And unfortunately, the tribal system doesn't promote that. There's a dependency mindset in that structure. Now, if I go back to Europe, for example, in Europe, in the medieval period, you had a feudal system where the lord of the manor owned the land, which So you had a very hierarchical structure, and you then had certain areas of land which was communal land, right, which was not owned by the people, but the people had rights to occupy it and to till it, to farm it for economic benefit. And that feudal system lasted hundreds of years until around about the 1500s, 1600s in Britain, where you had what was called the enclosure movement, which was highly controversial, because what it did was it transferred communal ownership into individual or family ownership, where people started to have title to their land, and that meant that they had an asset that they could trade. It gave them access to capital. And that was one of the most important drivers of the Industrial Revolution. First of all, the Agricultural Revolution, then the Industrial Revolution, because it was facilitating the accumulation of capital, which forms the basis of the economic system that we have today. So what I'm really saying is that at the moment, the land tenure system is not facilitating the acquisition and the development of capital. And if you go to Hernando de Soto, the Peruvian economist, he has done many studies around the world which shows that giving the title to land occupants is the most important single factor in unlocking what economists, and you know this, Mr. Golding, as an economist, are stranded assets. The land in many rural areas is stranded. It has no capacity to grow. And I think that this is a very, very important thing. Not getting away from the point you made, Chair, the communal working together concept is the whole basis of the cooperative. But at the current system, where it is owned by the chief, in my opinion, is detrimental to the development of economic agency and the development of co-ops.
We need to unpack this, because now I'm talking from experience. I was born in rural areas. I grew up in rural areas. The chief doesn't own the land. The chief doesn't have the title. The chief is the custodian of the land on behalf of the community. That is the interpretation. And also the chief doesn't divide alone. There are structures in the community. Each village has got is in donor and councils that would sit down and then look at firstly the needs of a community. So we shouldn't be mixing the land tenure and other systems. And also, let us argue in the context of what is a cooperative. A cooperative is a tool that facilitates the establishment of community-owned enterprises in terms of economy. A cooperative is also an entity that provides services to its members. Now, if then cooperatives are in need of money, and then the financial institutions that are providing financial resources that are needed by cooperatives are also cooperatives. They have different sets of rules from the rules of the commercial banks who would want title deeds, because the commercial banks are operating in that system of profit making. And the cooperative banks, because they subscribe to the principles of cooperative, they are not profit driven. They are there to facilitate development of communities using a cooperative concept. So let us shift this thinking that you will be able to develop cooperatives that are producing involved in agriculture by taking them to commercial banks. Commercial banks are designed to provide financial resources to profit-driven enterprises. Cooperative banks are designed to provide financial resources to like-minded cooperatives, and their reason for existence is to promote community ownership enterprises and develop communities. So the objectives are not the same. The same applies to a state-owned bank. A state-owned bank is there to provide financial support to state-owned enterprises. And therefore, the rules that will be made, the rules for borrowing, will be based on what is it that state-owned enterprises are mandated to do. And therefore, what kind of lending is supposed to be given to state-owned enterprises by state-owned banks? So those are two different things. Mina, I have lived this, and I have also studied it, and I have practiced it, and I know that the communal land system is a better setup for promotion of cooperatives, because cooperatives are actually not the end product. The end product is community development, developed communities socially and economically.
No, thanks, Chair. Chair, I just want to agree with you. I'm coming from a very deep rural areas. And I understand exactly what the Chair said. To Honorable Chance, I just want to remind you, we once visited the area at Wamapumulo, at Nkosi Mapumulo. I thought you learned a lot from there, because you saw how the chief was interested to assist the people that were starting their cooperatives. There is no law in the rural areas that stopped the people to use the land. Instead, the chief are open to give more land to the people that they want to develop the area. I'm the reference from the rural areas. You've got the hectares and you've got a lot of land that we are using there without anything that the chief says you can't use this land. It's more open than other things that you can experience. So I just want to disagree with you, Honorable Chance. You've been there. You know exactly how they behave. They are looking after the people because their existence is to the community. So I'm the reference. I'm coming from there. There is nothing like what you have said now. Thank you.
By making an example about a living organization that we have disabled in terms of taking the control of their destiny. This DFI is called King Crunch. It's in KZN. It was started by taxi owners, and their vision was one. From their cooperative financial institution, they are going to start a dealership, and then a motor space, and then, you know, they had a vision, and these are ordinary dadas from the village, right? Not highly educated. Now, this group of taxi owners, that vision is done because of our fragmented approach in terms of supporting this sector. One, FIFA, a state-owned entity, their mandate is to support small businesses like the King Crunch. So when they approach FIFA, FIFA says to them, I want to give you money to do all these things, right? But I'm limited by CBDA rules and regulations. That say I can only give you 15% of your total assets. Let's make an example. They had 1 million at a time. What is 15% of 1 million? 150,000. How many taxis can they buy from that? Not even one single combi can they buy from that. So I'm trying to say we are government, but we are not talking to each other in terms of implementing our mandate. So that's one way of the fragmented approach that I wanted to talk to. And then the other thing is the common bond. Right now we're visiting, I'm not sure any day, maybe I'll be fired because I was not told to say this. 2 weeks ago when this week passed, we visited CFRs with SASA delegation to see the state of readiness for CFIs to issue or assist in the grant payments. Because they are banks, in a way, right? They can offer the same services as banks. And they are based in the rural and communities where the SASA beneficiaries stay or live. Now, there's a common bond that says CFI can only service their members. And SASA is saying that will not help me because some of our beneficiaries are not your members as CFI. But that common bond is in law. So we are saying the rules that we put in place as government defeat the purpose or the bigger objectives that we want to achieve. So I just wanted to make closing in terms of that. And the 30 million deposit limit that CFI can take from members, that will never make sure that we reach those numbers.
Thank you, Chair. As we
close, before you do that, I also want to point out that the case of millions has been cleared, and they've been to the department with that dream. Okay. Our instrumental in facilitating their establishment and also linking them with the trainers from Kenya. But they have not been assisted by this department. The other thing is that the Cooperative Act of South Africa needs to be overhauled. It has got more hindering factors than to allow the development of cooperatives. One of them is that a primary cooperative must exist for 2 years before primary cooperatives can establish a secondary cooperative. For what reason? Because a secondary cooperative is an entity that provides a service to primary cooperatives. And if they can't buy a tractor, but collectively their secondary cooperative can buy a tractor that can be used by all the primary cooperatives, what damage will it do if the primary cooperatives were to be registered on the same day as their secondary cooperative? Because what would inform the establishment of the secondary cooperative is the need of the primary cooperative that can only be achieved through a secondary cooperative. So the people that were drafting that act, maybe they were wrongly advised. So I am with you in saying that we need to overhaul that act to actually unlock the potential of CFIs and cooperatives and also enable communities to actually become the masters of their own destiny. Because we are locking them to become consumers of other people's products when they are actually having a buying power. It's painful for the taxi industry because they have services that they use themselves. And if they are assisted to become a cooperative movement in South Africa, that is where we will see the cooperative movement growing in South Africa. Because those people are structured in the same way. They make their own rules. But the acts that we have are actually not assisting them to realize their potential.
Thank you very much, Chair Frosin and the members of the committee. I think as we fold our bags and whatever is inside it, we'll leave this particular committee exploding with hope that the message of making sure that cooperatives become mainstream in the economy, in fact, is being heard. And I think for us, that particular hope, we would sincerely would like to see it being translated into action. That's why it becomes important that the strategy that we are currently developing, just also to answer the Honourable Member, it will be as inclusive and integrating as possible. So every government department, every government agency that deals with cooperatives will be consulted to ensure that there is proper coordination. what will germinate out of this strategy will, of course, be this myriad of policy changes as well as legislative changes, because that has to come out. The examples have been made of what is the disenablers that are there in the legislation. And we hope that this respected committee and other related committees will in fact be able to assist us in achieving this particular vision. The second point that we would like to deal with is the issue that as a country, we need to be able to have this strong buy-in on cooperatives as a measure to be able to change the structure of the economy of this country. This country has got a deficit of about 1.8 trillion, which is the debt to GDP ratio of over 50%. It's unsustainable. So people who are living on the dole system or your social grant, that will continue and grow and grow, and it becomes unsustainable. So cooperatives are a countermeasure to be able to give self-empowerment to communities, to individuals, to create wealth for them, in a sense that that particular wealth is owned by them. So that's why we remain very passionate that cooperatives must actually be able to thrive in this country and actually become bigger businesses. There is in fact a very well-known economist, Thorstein Veblen, who wrote the theory of the ledger class. You know, very interesting theory around how people who are self-dependent end up self-destructing. And I don't think that it's one thing that we want to see in this country and end up building a nanny state. I don't think that's what we want to do. That's why self-empowerment measures will in fact be able to support them, and will actually request also state organs to be able to support us. On the second last point, and a very important point, there was a point that was made around concessional financing and how cooperatives are capitalized. The current system is that cooperatives, to be capitalized, they would have to go to CIFA, which is a state bank, and any other development finance institutions. Those particular development finance institutions themselves, they've got a very wrong model. It's not a developmental model. Mm-hmm. They would go and say, we will charge you prime plus two. And I've got serious problems with that, because, you know, when there was a huge debate around development finance institutions at the Reserve Bank, when I used to work at the Central Bank, responsible for strategy at the bank, we in fact had to debate this with the development financial institution, that they cannot use prime as a reference rate, because they get funding from government. So anybody who used prime as a reference rate is somebody who went to the Reserve Bank and borrowed through what is called the repo system. Mm-hmm. So the repo system, then you're able to put your 3.5%, that's what makes prime. But you get funding from government, which your cost of capital is zero. So prime can never be your reference rate. That's why when, in fact, I was the Director General for Economic Development in KwaZulu-Natal, we were very blunt with Italian Development Finance Corporation that you will not charge more than 5%, because all what you need to charge is your administration and how you can actually be able to break even. So what we are saying as well is that these development finance institutions need to fundamentally change how they actually fund, businesses, and particularly cooperatives. And I think that particular fundamental mindset would like to make sure that it finds its way into the strategy. And as we communicate as well, that happens. The other point as well I would like to make is the issue around SMMEs and CFIs. You know, you just have to go to a Harvard University. I mean, I studied finance at Harvard University. You would see how SMMEs are dependent on your credit unions for support. And money circulates around them, and they're able to create wealth among themselves. And also while helping, those who are in the SMME industry. So what I'm saying is that we need to be able to ensure that we firm and strengthen the credit union or cooperatives movement in this country. But that must be a buy-in from everybody, you know, also all state organs that are dealing with that. And lastly, I would like to give assurance, because it was an issue around visionary leadership that was raised in the committee, that as the CBDA, we remain very committed despite our limited resources. We've got well-resourced organization, very skilled people, not only who understand the development economics, the socio-economic development needs, but also people who understand transactional banking. And we're also passionate about how do we actually change this country and you know, and its people. So we'd like to thank this particular committee, Honorable Chair, respected members, for the opportunity that you gave us and the issues that, in fact, that we've been able to raise, where we think you can actually be able to assist us, will actually be highly indebted towards yourself. Thank you very much.
Sorry, Chair, I don't want to delay us unnecessarily, but I would just like to get the department's view on what was said about the GTAC report and just get their confirmation that they are engaging with this this inquiry, this report that's being hopefully produced before July. Just one other point, sir. CEPA is not in the business of providing equity, but CEPA is in the business of providing loans. Well, no, it's never going to capitalize these costs. The capital, the equity capital, won't come from CEPA. Equity capital will come from the state, or it will come through private investors. That's what's missing. An equity capital is free capital in terms of cash flow. It doesn't require to be paid back. So that's what's missing, in my view. I'm not saying that CEPA's loans are punitive in terms of their interest rates. You're right. And I think that the problem with CEPA is that, it has a bit of a problem because it charges high interest rates in so many cases because that covers the risk of default by so many of its borrowers. Currently, it has a default rate of over 50%. So, you know, it's got a problem. It has to be more careful about who it lends to. But I think that this committee has got to get to grips with the question of the capitalization of the banks and whether a state-owned or partially state-owned cooperative bank makes sense. And I like the analogy that you referred to about the Kenyan state-owned bank, which was eventually bought out by the courts themselves when they had the capital to do so. To me, that does make sense. But, you know, you've got to have some seed capital. You've got to prime the pump. And that's what's missing. Thank you, Chair. Just if I could just ask the department to ask the first question, please.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Through you, Chairperson. This is just to confirm that the department is very much aware of the development within CBDA. The department is actually involved with the CBDA through our acting DDG of cooperatives, Mr. Jeff Ndumo, who is a member of the board, and all decisions, all plans, you know, even the visits that the executive was talking about to CFIs, Mr. Ndumo was also involved. The terms of reference for the study, he was involved. He made inputs in those terms of reference. In fact, we are fully involved in the development within CBDA. We are sharing their challenges. We are actually engaged even with our DG in trying to assist them to tackle some of the administrative challenges that they are faced with. So I want to assure this committee and Honorable Chairs that our department is highly involved and highly informed. And even coming here, you know, we were part of the discussions with the colleagues in sharing notes and ensuring that whatever information that is presented here talks to the real issues that we are grappling with. both as our department and the CBDA. So rest assured, we are fully behind them and fully involved with them.
Thank you very much. Our response to your proposal is that your proposal falls in line with what we would like to see in relation to development of the cooperative movement in South Africa. We think that the Cooperative Bank Development Agency is very key to development of cooperatives in South Africa. In the same way that the Cooperative Development Academy would be important. We think that we share the same views with you in relation to the amendment of the Cooperative Act to include CFIs for funding. The issue that you are raising about the interest rates from CIFA that are too high, we have also raised that, but not only the rates, the whole funding model of CIFA doesn't speak to cooperatives and the needs of SMEs. We think that you understand your mandate, and the proposal in relation to the establishment of small business development officers is something that we'll have to discuss, but in my view, it would go a long way. Because the department can't have people all over. But also we would think that there is a need for you to also look at the fact that there are local economic development officers in all municipalities. There will be a need for reorientation, because we think that instead of establishing and coming up with a new team, could actually augment that team that is there, because currently the local economic development unit of a municipality one is not adequately funded, but it is the closest to the communities, and also taking into account that cooperatives are not developing in isolation. They are supposed to be also informed by the National Special Development Perspective of an area, and they should also relate to the local economic development strategy of a municipality. And then what I think is missing is the feasibility study at what level and the master plan at what level, which would then assist in ensuring that the LED department is working with the Department of Small Business and yourself to ensure that the systems that are being provided are actually trying to respond to the master plan that is based on a feasibility study. It's not just the person thinking that I want to have this kind of business, but that kind of business should be informed by the potential of the area, which would also then inform even the kind of the curriculum that is offered in the local schools, because it has to relate to how the economy needs to be developed. You can't be developing skills that are not required by
the economy, but also you can then at the school develop the skills that you do not know what economy is has to be developed. So the fact that we all know the national social development of each and every district, municipality and the metro, and we know the LED strategies of all local municipalities, let us then go down at what level and come up with the feasibility studies and master plans, then link to the LED instead of wanting to have a different workforce of small business development officers. They are there in the municipality. I think that there is a need to bring the Portfolio Committee on Finance and the Portfolio Committee on Small Business to be on the same level in terms of what is required in order to better position the cooperative development, the Cooperative Bank Development Agency, and also bring the, when the, these two portfolio committees have come together, they will then facilitate a situation where the Department of Finance and the Department of Small Business will talk one language, but also bring in COFSA, because all these things have to happen at local government level. Never mind the provinces. The provinces are not that much important for SMEs. Things happen at what level in the local municipality level. They don't happen at provincial level. So I think that you came here very clear in terms of your presentation and also in terms of what you are expecting from us. And also, we are looking at you and we think that you understand what your mandate is. You are not wrong by pinning your hopes in this portfolio committee, because this is the portfolio committee responsible for development, for ensuring that there is development of SMEs and cooperatives. And we think that cooperatives have got more role to transform the economy than SMEs, because they don't subscribe. They are actually a bridge between socialism and capitalism, and they promote community development, and they are the ones that need to be supported more. Thank you very much. We'll further engage. The functioning of the market access unit.
Like, you will not leave here uninformed. They went in on him, right?
Thank you. two colleagues. I'm with Nomvula Makgotho from the department here accompanying me, and Nonelwa Kobosiani, and these are the managers who are responsible for the market access, both in SMME or enterprise development plus the cooperative development. So they are the actual colleagues who are on the front line in terms of the market access for small businesses in both these branches. Chair, we're going to be taking you through in terms of the brief that was given to us, but we want to also give some overview in terms of the market access component of the enterprise development, as it were, so that we just try to map some kind of a context before we actually drill it down to the actual functioning of the unit, or the units as it were, as it was said. Chairperson, we have the outline of the presentation. I think as you can see in front of you, we're going to talk a little bit about introducing the subject matter in terms of market access, opportunities, and we look at the challenges that are facing small businesses and cooperatives around this particular area of work. And then the approach, the DSBD approach, market access components, and we'll talk a bit about the public sector market access component. And maybe we then, having made our own analysis in the past 2 or 3 years in the implementation of the mandate of the department, in terms of what is in the pipeline and what is it that we are initiating going forward in terms of dealing with this particular subject. We want to highlight in the preliminary part of the presentation the fact that access to market opportunities is one of the key enablers, especially for corporates in the country to implement their supply development program. And this stems from the some of the legal imperatives, for instance, the BEE, that actually provides that corporates need to provide supply development to small businesses to build that particular symbiotic relationship that's supposed to be existing between big business and small businesses, as it's happening globally. And we want to also highlight that governments worldwide have sought to increase the involvement of the private sector to build some efficiencies in the government, for private sector to provide certain goods and services to government. And this poses a bit of an opportunity for small businesses to take advantage of market access opportunities that are existing, given these provision of services. And public procurement in our department is one of the core government levers that we are utilizing, therefore, to actually provide market access for small businesses. In the main, I think recently the promulgation of the 30% set aside for small businesses have provided some kind of a lever in a way in terms of market access opportunities for small businesses. Now, over and above that, we as a department have taken a view that we need to build partnerships, strategic partnerships, within both public and private sector to begin to provide opportunities for market access for smaller enterprises and cooperatives. And the benefits that are derived out of that is that we need to leverage on the resources that are available in both these levels, both government and public private sector, and also share knowledge and expertise and resources to improve effectiveness and sustainability of smaller enterprises and cooperatives. Chair, we want to highlight the mandate of the department, and we do this strategically so that we actually always have to be reminded in terms of what is the mandate of this particular department in relation to this particular subject matter. The mandate of the Department of Small Business Development and its entities collectively is defined as to support radical social economic transformation through the promotion and development of sustainable and competitive enterprises. Sustainability becomes one of the core, because if you can provide all the services, the support, mentorship, capacity building, but if there are no markets, enterprises are not able to actually sustain themselves. So this is why this is then in the core of our business as a department. And we also want to allude that market access is an expression of the mandate of DSBD in terms of providing that sustainability of enterprises. And it actually touches, as we go to slide number 5, if you look at the elements of the ecosystem in terms of the support that we're providing as a department, you will see that market access also is taking a share in that ecosystem. And we highlight that, we want to highlight that quite very strongly to say, you can support all those things that are existing in the ecosystem, but market access becomes core in terms of existence, sustainability, and also survival of small enterprises and cooperatives. I want to highlight few, not all, but a few of the challenges that we are faced by the small enterprises when they're supposed to access market opportunities. Or let me put it this way and say, in the access market opportunity access, there are various challenges that we and also small businesses are facing. For instance, limited market intelligence by small businesses themselves in terms of where are these markets are existing so that they can be able to actually access these is something that actually is eluding us and we're grappling with currently. A lack of readiness by these enterprises to access once they know where these markets are. Lack of readiness, which is something that actually talks to issues of mentorship, capacity building, pre and post support, is something that is also is lacking. Lack of appreciation of government development imperatives by those who are actually supposed to actually provide this market access. For instance, the corporate, as I talked about, the symbiotic relationship that is unfortunately in our country is not necessarily as developed as it's supposed to be, as you can see in other countries. And also I want to allude to lack of clear enterprise supply development strategies that are existing in these corporates. Some don't even exist. And we actually, within our mandate, we're supposed to provide some of the guidance around this. That's why these strategic partnerships are actually supposed to actually provide such guidance. So I want to go to slide number 7 and speak about the approaches of market access opportunities. And allude to the fact that the department's approach in galvanizing support from partners is informed by the constitution itself, section number 217, around the issues of procurement. However, our current leverage that we are actually working on is 30% set aside. That actually emanates out of particular regulatory imperatives. Based on this, the department has established a dedicated function that is responsible for development, implement, and monitor market access strategies that are existing both within government and also in the private sector. Particularly in the private sector, we're looking at what is actually existing, because a bigger share of the market opportunities is existing in the private sector as opposed to government per se. Now, if we were to touch and allude to the functions that is mandated to this particular unit or units that are responsible for market access, their function basically is to identify market access opportunities and coordinate implementation of the private sector public supply development frameworks and guidelines. They also have to unlock private and public sector procurement through various policy levers. Therefore, we're saying there are policy levers that are existing out there in the market in both public and private sector, and I've alluded to some of these, the procurement in the public sector and also the supply development programs in the private sector that we can actually leverage on. However, we can even go beyond that and talk about the partnership that we're actually developing with the private sector and the public sector, and also the public sector entities, because that's where most of these markets are existing. And also what they are tasked to do is also to develop programs that improve the quality of products. Because it's one thing to have market access opportunities existing, but if we don't actually deal with issues of product quality, these enterprises will not really access these market opportunities, especially when we look at international or global market value chains where they can actually access these market opportunities. We need to actually deal with market quality products or products that these enterprises are providing. And also the function is mobilize the resources. The resources here, in this case, Chair, is relates to the fact that sometimes when we clinch the deals with the private sector corporates or some of the even public sector organizations, we have to have part funding so that we can be able to unlock this potential in terms of providing certain things with the funding that we provide as a department. So currently we are utilizing the incentives that we have to actually try to utilize to have some kind of part funding. And I will allude to that as I go on with the presentation. Now the market access component, if I may speak to that briefly, it talks to opportunities that are brought by corporate companies with the supply development programs that they provide, so that these enterprises can be able to access market opportunities within the value chains of these particular corporates. And however, we have seen during the past few years that this has been coming very slowly, and even though the Department of Trade and Industry has tried to modify or augment the codes of good practice in order to actually lift the element of enterprise development, this area of work is coming very, very slowly. It actually, as I would allude as I go on with the presentation, it actually seeks us to go into these corporates proactively and engage them in terms of seeking some enterprise development market access in these corporates. One thing that we also want to allude to is that we're also looking at international or global market value chains where our enterprises can actually play a role or begin to sell their wares and services. However, one of the things that we're actually advocating as well is that we need enterprises that are taking international or global markets opportunity to also already have been integrated fully within the local market so that we can be able to see that trajectory in terms of their growth. We have seen this in the number of enterprises that we have taken to over global markets. For instance, the recent SISMEF, where we took quite a number of enterprises, and it actually showed that we have, if we can work very hard, we can have globally competitive enterprises that can play into international markets. And then we highlight a few also other examples locally. For instance, the Department of Public Works, for instance, with their small contractor programs, have managed to integrate the enterprises that are emanating out of that particular program into the human settlement market opportunities, where they are actually providing various services and various products, including even building some of the RDT houses. And then access to finance is also one of the issues that as I alluded to earlier, to say enterprises, for instance, when they get some of the opportunities, they need loan or grant funding so that they can be able to take care of certain needs in terms of financial needs, so that they can be able to provide some of these products and services in these markets. And then business support, I talked about that as well, to say we sometimes, before we take these enterprises to markets that are market opportunities that are available, we have to analyze, we diagnose and design appropriate interventions that will enable them to be able to play in the space and do some monitoring and evaluation where there's a need. And we're utilizing, in this case, our agencies to actually begin to play that critical role. And then I alluded Chair, to the fact that we're talking to corporates, we're talking to public sector organizations, and through the transversal agreements, as it were. And however, we also very mindful of the fact that some of the transversal agreements, 29 of them that we have signed thus far, are not necessarily transversal agreements per se. They become bilateral agreements, even though they unlock certain opportunities. However, they don't have a potential, or some of them have potential to can be able to unlock some certain opportunities within the trilateral parties that we can work with. And we allude to some of the examples that are existing. For instance, Special Planning and Local Use Management Act, SPLUMA. You can actually look at what opportunities that can emanate from Department of Rural Development out of that particular act. And therefore, when we engage with Department of Rural Development and we look at this particular act, we look at what are opportunities that are existing that we can actually look at. Similarly, with COCTA, the recent summit that we have, LED summit that we had recently, there are quite a number of resolutions that we have actually had within that summit. And out of those resolutions, we see potential of transversal agreements emanating out of that, both in district municipalities, the LED offices, and also even the national department itself. Now, if I may go to what we're seeking to do, we have really noticed that there are certain things that we can do properly. However, we need to sort of codify these things under one market access framework so that we can be able to say what is it that is the direction as a department that we can be able to take. And I think this emanates from the lessons that we have learned over the years, a few years that we've been implementing the program of enterprise development. And we're looking at this in terms of some kind of a direction and guidance. Working towards streamlining and aligning initiation and implementation of partnerships with our agencies is one of also the elements. Because CEDA and CIFA, for instance, they are also entering into some kind of partnerships. And we want to align these to begin to say, are they talking to the mandate? Are we talking the same language, the three departments as a portfolio? So that we can be able to enhance the capacity that this portfolio can bring around the market access opportunities. And then also one of the initiatives that we are looking at also is the development of partnership accelerator program, where we can ring-fence the budget dedicated specifically for the leveraging of the market access opportunities. And we're doing this because we over the years in terms of our analysis, we have noticed that when we have some of these deals, the department doesn't have part funding. That can actually meet some of these our partners halfway. For instance, I think there's an example of Nestle. For instance, Nestle would say we need the department to actually provide some part funding for the enterprises that we are establishing, so that we can provide certain things in terms of equipment that is needed for these enterprises that we are establishing. So we want that accelerator because we don't want when we enter into some kind of agreements or partnerships with these organizations, we are unable to say we can provide this part funding to deal with certain things that are our part of our mandate as a department. And going forward, we have identified a few other departments, and we still identify and going to be identifying some organizations. I think we have learned the lessons out of the 29. Transversal agreements that we have cleaned so far, that we need to be strategic in our approach to look at departments, organizations, private sector, corporates that can actually bring some leverage in terms of market access opportunity. Because some of the public sector organizations in the main that we have entered into partnerships with, we find that we still grappling 2 years down the line in terms of accessing some of the opportunities. So strategically, we said we need the departments, organizations, and private sector corporate that will actually provide those opportunities that we are looking at. And National Treasury is one of these, because through their supplier development, the database that they have, we look in terms of how do we analyze that database and begin to identify what type of enterprises are accessing these opportunities in terms of 30% set aside, and begin to say what is the scale that we can build out of that. And I think we really have to have a very strategic partnership with that particular department. Agriculture, forestry, and fisheries as well, there are quite a number of things that are coming out of the Operation Pakisa that actually they are coming up with. And also, in fact, also within their components of branches in terms of what they are implementing, we have noticed that we can have opportunities not only within the department itself, but also entities that are working around that department to form that relationship and tripartite that I was talking about. And then COPTA, I spoke about COPTA, for instance, wherein we already have an agreement with, or we are finalizing the agreement with COPTA, and we are looking at LED offices, we are looking at district municipalities, and in terms of what we can do, because these district municipalities, they have some kind of competitive advantage. You find that some of district municipalities will have, for instance, tourism and agriculture, if you go for Ugu, for instance, as their driver of their economy. And we say, how do we leverage into that and begin to actually make sure that the enterprises are beginning to access market opportunities within those district municipalities and surrounding. And also private sector like Baloworld, we are looking at that. Santam is one exciting one. Santam is actually one test case that we want to use to actually look at the spray painters and panel beaters in the townships that have not been able to access market opportunities within the insurance fraternity or insurance industry, so to speak. And we're looking at that in terms of how do we, these smaller panel beaters, spray painters, how can they get recognized by these insurance houses, so that we can be able to direct vehicles to these smaller spray painters and be recognized, and the insurance begin to pay. So Santam is working with us around this program, and we think it's going to be a test case for us to even talk to other insurance houses in future. And I think this is one area that we've been grappling with for over the years, in terms of making sure that we actually break that monopoly that is existing between the insurance companies and the bigger and in the main white spray painters and panel painters. So we then, if you go to further slides, I'm not going to talk much on that. It's just these the examples that we are actually talking to in terms of the agreements that we already have. That brings that transversality in nature of the agreements in a way of not only agreement with a particular department, but it brings some other third parties to work with. For instance, one of them is Department of Environmental Affairs, where we are working with various, for instance, we're working with Environmental Affairs, but we have dropped in some of the companies like Anglo-American, for instance, to work with us. We are working with Operation Pakisa around recycling and waste management. So it brings opportunities not only in the workings of different departments, but in the workings also of other organizations that are playing in the space. And we're talking SAB, MILA, for instance, Women in MAIDS, Cooperative Women in MAIDS, I think is one example that we've been presenting in this particular committee for some time, where we talked about opportunities that are derived by these women. Yes, there are certain tedious things that we still have to do with this particular, and also the expansion that they are actually proposing. But we think this is one case that is actually, we can say, flag as an example that that is of a market access opportunity that is already existing and functioning. And Masizane Fund is one of those examples as well. And I think colleagues will allude to if there's going to be a question asked. spoke to about Nestle India, where we're looking at about 50 enterprises that already applied, and Nestle is actually organizing these enterprises. They are very small establishments that are looking into the townships and providing struggle shops with the products that are produced by Nestle. And as a department, as I was speaking about part funding, we need to actually provide part funding and provide mentorship, provide post and pre-support that is needed by these enterprises. But we think this is also something that we're testing, and we think we can actually have a scale in terms of providing. And it can be also part of the lessons, looking at these companies that are providing or producing the products that are actually consumed by our local or by our townships and sponsor shops, that we can actually build enterprises around those companies and products that they produce. So I think I will leave it there. Thank you very much for this opportunity. I think that's what we prepared for this particular presentation today. Thank you.
The presentation is the only thing that you're supposed to get right now, right?
Thank you very much. Can we proceed with our meeting? I will give an opportunity for members to ask questions and make comments. Madam Chair, followed by Honorable Mutembu.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to the Department for your presentation. I'd like to begin by asking you to tell us about the unit itself. How many people do you have in the unit? What are their positions? What are their roles, responsibilities? And how do you believe that the capacity of the unit is sufficient for you to be able to make an impact in terms of the mandate? The second question is, it disturbed me in your presentation when you referred to enterprise and supply development projects not having impact, deriving positive impact. How do you suppose that should be reversed? I noticed that you are collaborating with, well, you mentioned a couple of companies, BioWorld, Endo, SAP. How are you collaborating with the business development support agencies and the BE agencies, the agencies that are monitoring the performance of companies in terms of achieving their BE scorecard? Because it seems that certainly in terms of state, certainly in terms of much of your emphasis is on helping companies reach their targets in terms of the 3% net profit after tax, which is what is mandated in terms of the 3% of net profit after tax is that it's not, it sort of falls between two stools, in my view. In other words, it's not high enough to make it important to the CEO as a factor on the bottom line, but it's big enough to make it a nuisance, which unfortunately leads to a box-ticking exercise. It leads to a mentality of compliance rather than an attitude driven by need to improve competitiveness within the supply chain. So that is leading me to the question of your department or your unit. How is your unit viewing this as an opportunity to get companies to fundamentally rethink their supply chain along the lines of driving competitiveness through procuring from small businesses who are more nimble, who probably have greater access to new ideas, who are able to adopt new technologies quicker. And that requires a change of mindset within the organization at the top. The trouble is with most procurement departments in government and in business, in corporate, is that they're very set in their ways. They have traditional supply lines, supply chains, suppliers who they like to do business with, understandably, it reduces the risk. But experimentation and innovation is really all when it comes to growth. And this then leads me to the question of exports, which you touched on as well. In order for this country to grow its economy, it has to follow the route of all successful economies dating back hundreds of years, which is they spend a lot of effort building export markets for their products and services. And in today's world, that means building a global supply chain. One company on its own is never going to be able to crack a market unless it collaborates along the supply chain. So that then begs the question, in terms of your own unit, have you built up or are you building up expertise in supply chain management and globalization of supply chain? Is it a concern that and I got this from the minister herself, that many of the small businesses that you took to China were not ready. They just didn't have the capacity to expand on opportunities that were presented to them. You know, whilst you can maybe understand that, it's not viable in the future for you to be building markets for companies that don't have the capacity. So supply and demand have to work together. There's this drawing an opportunity for a company that doesn't have the ability to supply. And as you know, when you go to the world market, they don't ask for 100 units, they ask for 100,000 units. So how is it possible for you to develop that capacity that enables rapid growth of small businesses and the creation of large numbers of jobs? Because that, after all, is what we all have to achieve. I'd like to know what steps you are taking to get departments and government entities to report on their 30% procurement commitment in terms of the legislation. Is that your role? Do you see it as your role? If not, who's doing it? If it isn't being done, why not and how can it be done? I think that the example of Samsung is very instructive because barriers to entry for small businesses in the townships is one of the biggest problems that has to be overcome. And again, this goes back to what I said earlier about risk and, you know, comfortable relationships between suppliers and clients. The clients in this case being Samsung and all the other short-term insurance companies that motor vehicles and the suppliers being the backyard mechanics and the guys who are spray painting and whatnot. But as a client, me, you, everybody that drives a car, you want to make sure that when your car is fixed, capacity as part of this process, and building that capacity and making sure that what is supplied and produced is of quality that is acceptable to the client. So it's a massive task. I mean, it's enormous. It goes to the heart of actually what our economic policy must be. It must be capacitating small businesses in the supply chain, breaking down barriers to entry, incentivizing customers, clients, corporates and government to open up their markets to innovation and competition. And, it does require a visionary position to be taken by the department, a cross-departmental approach. Department of Economic Development in terms of competition policy, small business support through financial instruments. It's a multifaceted approach. It can't be done just by opening up a market. So that comes to the ecosystem that you referred to in your slide. Every element of that ecosystem has to be tackled together. You know, market access without collaboration across all the other elements of the ecosystem is not going to work. So just as important. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. We welcome this report, but I'll have to be corrected. It's as if sometimes the department you want to achieve, yes, but you're not like maybe sometimes in doing the work as per the demand made from the people. The good example about Santam, is it Santam or Santam? Santam, yes, Santam. It is good, but my question will be, were you approached or is it your thinking that, you know what, there's this sector, they are penalty beaters, they are spray paint type of cars, and we see them not being assisted in a manner that, because it is good, but if it's them, who will like say, this is what we need, this is the assistance that we require from the department, maybe sometimes it will be better for them to be assisted in a manner that they know and they understand. It's not maybe the department that will think that, yes, this sector is not attended to in a manner that it's supposed to, and we are to correct whatever that we need to correct as a department. Another thing is the issue of spaza shops. We know that they did not get the necessary support that they had to, and then most of them they closed down, and we know that most of the spaza shops are now in a foreign national. And how are you going to deal with that? Because if you will be assisting people in ensuring that they access the market, but because we've got this challenge, and most of the shops, other than your spaza shops, there were people who had supermarkets, and then they closed down those supermarkets in townships. And they opened up to other bigger retail shops, you know, that how are you going to, what's the plan in ensuring that our people, you know, who were there, who are no longer there, and they ended up, because of frustration, some of them they sold, not because they wanted to, it's because there was not enough support. You know, there was no encouragement, no motivation to them. Hence, they ended up failing whatever that they were surviving on to. And I'm happy that you have looked into the issue of sustainability. But indeed, there should be growth, development, and sustainability. So, as the presentation was being done, it was hammered mostly, you know, that sustainability is like the core of this initiative. It is appreciated. So we want to see our people being assisted in a manner that they know and understand which this is our needs, and we are to be attended as per what we see, which we will be able to succeed. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. My question is, what is the difference, the gap between the theory as presented here and the practice? The second part is the establishment of malls, in as far as they killed township and rural economies. So how does your unit play a role such that negativity towards SMEs and cooperatives, is ameliorated, is softened at least. And then, following on what Comrade Ntebo was saying, on the spaza shops, what is the relevance of the unit to spaza shops? Do spaza shops and hawkers, are they aware of the unit? Do they see the unit as a tool, as an instrument? Or the unit is living somewhere there, and the spaza shops are in another world, you know, Earth and Venus, so where there is no connection. If we were to randomly go to 10 spaza shops and 10 hawkers, do we get a feeling that they will say they know the unit? They appreciate the value and the impact of the unit? Or they will just look at us and say, hey, what are you talking about? And if you are not, if they are not aware of you, can you claim that you are representing them practically? And if that area of SMEs and cooperatives is not well addressed, means the inequalities between black and white are also going to stay miles apart. unless you convince me that you are addressing the inequalities as I'm speaking. And regionally, can we say that the unit is making an impact regionally? If we talk of marketing, are we marketing beyond our borders? Are we marketing into the Southern African, at least, let alone the whole of Africa, to seize opportunities in the whole of Africa? Or is it that Africa is more usurping opportunities, the world is more usurping opportunities in South Africa than we making an impact in the Southern African part as well as the African part and the world? The point that Comrade Tim had made, just making a follow-up on it. And my last point is to emphasize what Honorable Charles was saying, that to what degree do we equip our local businesses to meet the demand? Because if the demand is 90% and we are only producing 10%, if that gap is too much, then where is the relevance or the practical value of the unit? Thanks, Committee.
Can the department respond?
Thank you very much. I have colleagues that have noted that will assist me in the response, and I would want Noni to talk on the question firstly before we touch on other questions. The question of the unit itself, how is it structured, and the roles and responsibilities, and who is in these particular two units. and non-volatile as I can add, because he is also tackling the corporate as part of the unit.
Thank you, Chair. The market access unit within the entrepreneurship enterprise development branch is capacitated with 5 individuals. We basically look at the market intelligence. We conduct research in terms of where the opportunity for small businesses and corporates. We look at then engaging the particular industry partners. We then have meetings with them, also partners from the department in terms of business development support, FIDA, we have meetings with VFI, the unit that is involved with the market, with the financing, the incentives, as well as with the enterprise supply development unit. Basically, to put all partners in one room to look at the ESD program of a particular partner, where they can fit into the mandate of the SBD, following which should all partners agree to establishment of a partnership, and we are all agreement with firms, we will enter into a formal partnership, either in the model of a MOU or MOA. We'll sign the agreement, and then we'll develop the implementation plan and the M&E. So with the units with 5 people, we are very unexpected. The model of work here is very large. We've got 11 partnerships with signed in the private sector alone. So we're all involved in the initiation, implementation, as well as M&E. Yes, that's what I can add.
Thanks, and thank you, Chairperson. Just to add to the question by Honorable Chance, we also have 3 people who are responsible for identifying market opportunities and procurement opportunities for cooperatives, especially within the private sector, no, the public sector. And what happens is that we go through the strategic, the APTs of various departments, and we also look at the priority programs that are driven by certain government departments, i.e. one would talk of Operation Pakisa, and public works programs and so on. We actually focus on strategic programs within the partner departments and position ourselves or identify opportunities for cooperatives and SMMEs within those programs. And with regard to public sector, I think also to respond to Honorable Sembu, we approach departments, and it's very few departments that approach us, but many of them we have signed with close to 30 at this moment, and the bulk of them are the ones that we have approached. Some we signed with them after having interacted with the portfolio committee. DOT, for instance, we signed with them having, in fact, the portfolio committee assisted us to initiate that a relationship. We have people who are driving partnerships and bilateral agreements within public sector. And what we do is that we identify areas of collaboration and how will the cooperatives and SMEs benefit from such a collaboration, and we then over and above the agreement MOU or MOA, we actually develop an implementation plan with targets and with time frames. The challenge that we are sitting with currently is that we have very limited resources. I think Mr. Mohoto alluded to the financial allocation that will partner the core funding of the to implement such certain programs that we have agreed upon. So that is the biggest challenge that we are sitting with, and hence in our document we said within the next few weeks, we are looking at putting together a fund program, you know, a facility that will actually assist to prepare the co-ops and SMMEs to be supplier ready, to be able to participate in that opportunities, but also a fund that will co-fund whatever that must be funded to kickstart the program, because you can't go into partnership with nothing in your hands, which is a challenge that you are sitting with currently. So basically,
we've been doing this thing for the past 4 years with the department, and we also want the department to acknowledge that we are not full thinking. It's not that we live in another planet and the department lives in another planet. We are all South Africans and we come from communities. Can you explain to us the mandate of this unit?
The mandate of this unit is to facilitate access to procurement and market opportunities for cooperatives and SMMEs. The unit has people.
How? The next question is how? How do you do that?
What we do is that we either approach or we are approached by...
You should be having a strategy. It is a unit, the department, which of that system. The department, firstly, the department is mandated to develop SMMEs and cooperatives in South Africa, champion that. That is the first thing that we all need to agree on. Secondly, the department has to respond to the National Development Plan targets. And the National Development Plan targets are that small business will create 9.9 new jobs by 2030. How many years are left before we get to that 2030? How many years are left before we get to 2030? 12. Out of the 400 cooperatives that were funded by this department, none of them are supplier ready. 400. None of them are supplier ready. So if you go to negotiate, you should be telling us that these are the departments that we identify opportunities from them. These are the products. This is the amount of expenditure. And this is the number of cooperatives and SMMEs that we can develop to actually match the demand and the supply. You are not telling us that. You are speaking in a very general manner. And this committee is not going to continue listening to general statements. We want results here. You are paid every month to achieve a particular mandate. Can't be telling us that a supplier ready negotiating MOU, we are not interested in MOU. We are interested in Zakane. There are so many schools that require school furniture. There are so many schools that have got a broken furniture. We know that the ANC and the governing party took a decision that school furniture will be supplied by cooperatives. We saw that as a market opportunity for cooperatives. And this is what we did. This is what was done by the unit that provides support for supplier development. This is what we did in order to ascertain the size of the market. This is what we did in negotiating with the CIFA, for CIFA to provide or whoever to provide money to buy all the things that are needed in order to either repair that furniture or manufacture that furniture. And these are the jobs that have been created as a result of the, not this thing, not this. This is a composition. And I last wrote the composition in grade 7. And I'm not expecting the department to come and present the composition here. I'm expecting the department to come and present a strategy, well-researched strategy, marketing strategy. And the market is there. It's not that there is no market. Government has committed that 30% of all goods and services will be procured from small businesses and cooperatives. The question that you should be, the information that you should be giving us is, in terms of rents and cents, what is that 30% of goods and services that are procured by government? And which one could be supplied by small businesses? You are not telling us that. That is the information that we want from here.
Chair, thank you very much. It's noted. I think I want to pick up on the last issue of rand and cents, that we are already working with the Office of in National Treasury, the Procurement Office, to do the analysis of the supplier development database, so that they can actually pull that information that we're talking about out of that supplier database. Because we are also mindful of the fact that we need to have some kind of analysis of information so that we can have a baseline in terms of how many enterprises are supplying in government across, and then so that we can be able to plan properly which are those rates.
That's not what you're supposed to be asking for. What does 30% translate to in terms of rents and cents? And which goods are bought? And which of those goods and services can be supplied by small businesses? You're not supposed to be looking at who are the suppliers. You have a responsibility to develop suppliers and open that market for them. The starting point is, there's a policy 30%. In total, what is that percent translating to in terms of rand and cents? And which goods are being procured? And which of those goods that are being procured can be supplied by small businesses? Which small businesses are ready to actually take advantage of that market? You are not telling us that. And you are not also telling us which goods form part of that 30% that cannot be supplied by small businesses, and give us the reason and how you would be solving those problems, those hindering factors that would make those small businesses not to access that market. You are not, your mandate is not to sign the MOUs. Your mandate is to open the market for small businesses, and the market is there. It's government 30% of goods and services. There. Schools are government. They buy school furniture. Schools are government. They buy stationery. Here, where we are, government, we use toilet paper all the time. The resolution that was taken by cabinet in November 2007 has got a list of things that can be supplied by small businesses. You are not telling us that out of that list, so many cooperatives have been developed to a level where they are able to supply those things. I don't want us to waste time. You have not given us what we want to hear from you. And I'm going to end this meeting and ask you to go back, prepare a thorough report to us. And if you don't have a strategy, go and formulate a strategy and bring back a strategy to us. A marketing strategy. The market is there. Government has said 2007, 75%. And in terms of construction, it means from the Department of Human Settlement, 70%, 75% of all the houses that are built in South Africa should be built by small businesses and cooperatives. You are not telling us of how many housing cooperatives you have developed. How have you accessed that market? Enabled cooperatives to access that market. If there are 1,000 houses, 750 of those houses should be built by small businesses. And how many municipalities are building houses in South Africa? RDP houses. Linked to that is the manufacturing of the products that are used when you build the houses. Linked to that is supply of sand and accessing my license for people that would be providing sand. So you come here and you tell us, you just tell us general information that has got nothing to do with results. Go back and prepare a thorough report respecting this portfolio committee that you are not talking of a foreign country. You are talking to us, we are citizens in this country and we are lawmakers in this country. Thank you. Comrade Charles.
Comrade now, right? Good. Chair, I think you're justified in your expression of anger, but I would suggest that that this message be communicated to the minister and the DG, because that it actually is from them that the strategy needs to be developed and the directive needs to come down from them as to what is necessary to, you know, provide real hard facts. I'm glad you pointed out the fact that the report was full of generalities, which it was. There was actually nothing in there that gave any hard facts. So I think they do need to go back and do their homework.
So we haven't dealt with this matter. Go back and prepare. And if you have not done anything, come back to us and say, we don't know where to start from. And don't waste our time. Declare the meeting closed.
No.
Sorry, sir. No. Minute. No, we're not. Yeah, we just refer the minutes to the next meeting. Yeah, we don't have a quorum. No. Thank you.